tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing the second half of my interview with dancer, choreographer, actor, director, James Harkness, who, as you heard if you were listening to part one of this interview last week, has directed the West Coast Black Theater Troupe production of The Color Purple. In this half of the interview, you will hear James tell the story of one of his first auditions as a dancer for the Oscars, which was going to be hosted by his childhood idol, Debbie Allen, and how that leads to the remarkable story of how he wound up on Broadway. And also, you will hear him talk at length about The Color Purple. He was in the Broadway production, and he has a lot to say about it and the power of it and his connection to it. Also, you'll hear some more music from The Color Purple. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down
is about being the person we really are. As a psychotherapist, it's unfortunately clear to me that way too many of us are acting out perhaps a version of who we are, but not the whole, the real person. And this happens when in our family of origin, or in our classroom, or in our culture, or in our religion, or just in our peer group, we have a quality, a way of being, a laugh, an interest, a curiosity, a skill that attracts us, a sexual orientation that is not acceptable to the group. And when that happens, for most of us, we cannot continue to demonstrate that. It's just too painful. And because we're very flexible as human beings, we figure out a way to hide those things which didn't work, which brought a consequence which we did not like. And we get so good at hiding these things that over time we actually forget we have them. And so we come into adulthood acting out only those parts of us which somehow worked in those very, very important associations. Unfortunately, while that may have worked in our childhood, in adulthood, it means that we are in denial often for some really important aspects of ourselves. And again, as a therapist, it is my belief that our lives are better served when we have access to all of who we are. And it's not really as simple as saying, oh yes, I had this funny sense of humor and they didn't like it in my family, I'll just get it back now. No, it's not as simple as that. But it doesn't mean that it cannot be done. And the Lynn Show is about saying, if this rings a bell with you, if this sounds at all familiar, if you think that you have cheated yourself out of some aspect of yourself that you'd like to get back, it may very well not be too late. And if you want to talk more about that, you can reach me at my website, thelynnshow.com, thelynnshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, thelynnshow.com. There's a button for email me, click on it, and leave me an email and I'll get back to you. On my website, you can also listen to all the shows I've ever done and all the interviews I've ever done, including the one I'm airing today, which is the second half of my interview with the charming, the talented, the interesting James Harkness. And as I said in the run-up, you get to hear a little of what we heard last week. This is his audition with Debbie Allen, and how it helped him to believe in his capacity to be what he is, which is a dancer. I interview people who make their living or their life within art, so you can hear what it sounds like when people are really who they are. And you really do hear it in James. So as I also said in the run-up, James is here having directed The Color Purple for West Coast Black Theater Troupe. And in this show, I'm going to play a couple of songs from the show. The show has a lot of up-tempo, exciting, passionate songs, but it also has a couple of really lovely songs. And we're going to start out with one of those. It's a short song called Too Beautiful for Words. And following right on that is the second half of my interview with James Harkness.
You're not ugly. You're the grace of God if us ever see it. You don't believe me. Miss Seeley, look here. Look at yourself. I've always been the kind of gal that had a lot to say. I says the things that's on my mind, too dumb to shy away. But you hush my mouth and still me with a song I've never heard. I guess that means that you are just too beautiful for words. I've seen this life from high and low and all that's in between. I've danced with dukes, chromed with counts, been courted like a queen. But when I see what's in your heart, all the rest is blurred. The grace you bring into this world's too beautiful for words. You hide your head under your wing just like a little bird. Oh, don't you know you're beautiful, too beautiful for words. Ooh, Seeley, you're too beautiful for words.
They call me up with a really big audition. And And so I was like four, and it was for the Oscars, back when Debbie Allen was still doing the Oscars. And I was like, Debbie Allen? The Oscars? Yes. So I go to my job, and I was like, can I have the day off? I have an audition. And they were like, an audition? I was like, I'm a dancer. They're like, oh, wow, you're a dancer. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, sure, take the day off. So I took the day off, and I went, and it was a Friday. And I had my audition, and I walked into this room. I don't know if you've ever seen, there's a, on Wilshire Boulevard, there's a place where they hold things for the Oscars. And when you go up to this building, they have two big Oscar statues on either side mm-hmm. of the entranceway. And I walk into this audition. As I said to you, I watch a lot of television, and I would record Star Search. Fame was a huge thing for me as a kid. Anything, any award show, be it the Miss America pageants or the Oscars or this or that, anything that had dancing and singing on it, I would record them over and over and over and learn the steps. I knew every Janet Jackson video. I still know every Janet Jackson, everything. So I walk into this room and I see all these people that I have watched on television, in music videos, in movies, they're all there in this room auditioning for
this thing.
This thing. And I...
yes!
And this is not like the agent audition where, you know, I think there were maybe 40 people in the room. This is for the Oscars.
Right.
So
everybody who can is there.
And this was the men's call.
Right.
And the men, the top of the line male dancers in Los Angeles were at this audition. I walked in, I went over, sat my bag down, went to the left, and there were two people who I adore. I adore them now still. I've become friends with these people now. At the time, though, I just went, oh. And they were stretching, and they were talking, and they were doing all the things that they were doing, and I felt so out of place. Mm-hmm. So I picked up my bag, and I turned, and I walked to the door, and I stood in the doorway, and I was like, if you don't do this now, you're never going to do this. So I turned around and I went back and I put my bag down. And I went through the audition and Debbie Allen was there. She walked out. She had her two assistants with her. And they started teaching the combination and I danced.
Yeah.
With all these people. And I made it through the first day of auditions. And Debbie Allen shook my hand and she said, good work. Work on that and come back tomorrow. This was one of my childhood idols.
Yes.
Shaking my hand and saying, good work. And I was like, if I had walked out of that door, this would have never happened.
Right.
So I went back. I went back the next day. I felt like I wasn't going to wash my hand ever. I came back the next day. I didn't get the job. But that was that first step, or maybe third step, or maybe as we're talking about it, there were so many steps.
Right.
Up to this point.
But this is the one that said, this is possible for me.
I think so. Sure.
I mean, because having gotten the call back for the first day, you must have known that you were at least as good as however... No, you didn't know. Oh, my God.
I didn't look at it that way. I just was happy that it happened. I definitely didn't look at it that way.
Okay, all right.
It was just incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
So I go back to work, and weeks pass by, maybe not even that many weeks pass by, honestly. Maybe a week and a half to 2 weeks, if that right. passed by. And I get another phone call, and they have another audition for me for something even bigger than the Oscars. One of the biggest things, and it was for Michael Jackson. And so to the office. And I was like, so can I have another day off? And they were like, it's great. We think it's great. But we can't keep giving you days off. This was now the third. There's another day off I asked for. Right. This is 3 days off in the span of a month.
Right.
So, and it wasn't really working out at the job anyway. So a decision was made that day. And I stopped working at that company. And I went to the audition for Michael Jackson with thousands of other dancers
right.
that went to the Michael Jackson audition. And it was a 2-day event, 2 or 3-day event. So I made it through the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And I made it through the second day.
Oh my God.
And then I made it down to the last 12, 13, 14 guys or something like that.
How many were they hiring?
I think it ended up being... Oh, they were going to hire, I think, 8.
Oh, my God.
I think it was 8. It was either 6 or 8 that they were going to hire. And I made it down to the last group of guys that they videotaped us all together as a group doing the combination. Kenny Ortega, who's an amazing director. He was the director for Michael. He's been Michael's director for most of his career. As for his tours, anyway. And I was like, I can't believe I'm here. But there was so much adrenaline and nerves going that didn't... It registered, but it didn't register. Until they were like... They brought us in the room individually, one by one, and they taped us doing the dance thing. And then they were like, and we also want to see you freestyle. So we freestyled. And then they said, now... You can say anything you want to say to Michael Jackson because he's going to sit and look at all these videotapes. And so it's just, you can send him a personal message. And I was like, I get to say something to Michael Jackson on videotape? I had no idea what to say. And then so what I ultimately ended up saying is, we have something in common. And I was like, I was raised as a JW2. I was raised as a Jehovah's Witness.
Ah.
And so that's what I said to Michael Jackson. And we waited and waited and we waited. We waited and we waited and we waited and we waited. We waited for weeks trying to find out if we were going to get the job.
Right.
At the end of the day, and our agents kept saying, we haven't heard anything. Settle down.
Right.
And at the end of the day, Michael ended up wanting to use the same dancers that he had on his previous tour.
Oy.
So we were all, of course, let down. And then one of his dancers backed out, and one of our guys, one of the guys in the group got the job. Not me,
mm-hmm.
but the guy that got the job. It was a no-brainer as far as I was concerned. You know, I was like, yeah, well, of course he got the job. But that was,
oh my God.
That was my experience. And what happened from there is Kenny Ortega was working with another huge, huge artist who's a huge star in Puerto Rico in the Latin music market. And he called up my agent and said, we'd like him to come in for this audition. And as long as he works as hard as he worked at the Michael audition, he has a really good shot at getting the job. And I got the job.
Wow.
And that was my first job as a performer.
Yeah.
And I never looked back.
Oh my God.
And it has led me so many different places that I didn't expect to coming to being here and directing. Ultimately, in some ways, I've always directed.
Yes, even from the beginning.
Even from the beginning.
Right.
But getting into Broadway, which my story getting to Broadway is equally as kind of fascinating. When I tell it and I...
You have to relive it.
I relive it and then it goes away and then right, I tell it again and
well,
I relive it.
Tell it to us.
I went to Vegas to hang out with some friends of mine who used to live in San Diego who I met at that dance studio. They kept saying, come out to Vegas. You can get a job here really easily. I wanted to make it in L.A. I wanted to do movies. I wanted to do music videos. I wanted to do what all the L.A. dancers that I had watched did. And I tried. And I did a movie I never did a music video. I did industrials. All those things that I wanted, they just didn't seem to be happening. But I was not going to give up, so I just kept going. I also didn't have a car, as I said. So I got that job. I went on tour. It was amazing. I made a lot of money. And then I came back, and I started auditioning again, and I didn't get very many jobs. And it was very disheartening. Mm. So I used up that money. I would get on the bus or the train. My day would start at 5 a.m. from San Diego to get on that first bus or first train to get to L.A., downtown Los Angeles, to figure out the public transportation to get me out to either Santa Monica, wherever the auditions were.
Right.
If I got cut, then I would turn around and go back home. Or if there was another audition, then I would try and figure out the bus system to get me to the other audition in time. And the public transportation in Los Angeles is not the greatest. And I didn't really know any other dancers in L.A., really. So it took a little while till I started meeting people that would take me. If there was another audition, I could ride with them in their car. But ultimately, I would either get called back or not. If I got a call back, callbacks usually happened that day. And so I would wait around until it was time for the callback. Callbacks are usually in the evening, so I'd do my callback. If I got kept, then I would come back the next day. I would go back home, which by that time it's 9, 10 o'clock at night, maybe 11. So I have to take whatever the last bus or train is. I get home by about, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe 2 o'clock in the morning, and I would turn around and get back up at 5 o'clock in the morning and hop on the bus and get back out to L.A., unless it was a later audition. And that was my life for years.
Oh, my goodness.
And I would do industrials. I did work. I'm not going to say that it was fruitless. I definitely worked, and I met people, and there's some amazing human beings that are still a part of my life that I'm so grateful for. But Los Angeles did not pan out for me. So when my friends said, come out to Vegas, you can get a job, I was like, no. Because that meant I couldn't make it.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of a stigma. There used to be a stigma on Vegas where it was like, if you weren't good enough to make it in Los Angeles, you went to Vegas. Or if you were too old to do that, then you went out to Vegas. So I was like, absolutely not. Hanging out with my friends, they're like, well, at least see some shows and just have some auditions. So they would set up auditions for me for a couple of shows. And after they would set up the audition for me, I would politely call, because I didn't want to tell them no, but I would call the people back and go, I'm actually not going to be able to make it to that audition.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I didn't.
Yeah, no, I got it.
So I get off the airplane in Vegas, because we were there to do an industrial, and I decided to stay with my friends after the industrial was over. Got off the airplane. The first thing I saw was Enter the Night, the one show you must see, Stardust Hotel and Casino. And you know how Vegas is if you've ever been to Vegas. Yeah. There's just signs everywhere. And I kept seeing that sign everywhere. And I was like, okay. And then I took my walk around Vegas and I walked around the strip and I ended up underneath the Stardust and I saw the sign. It was like, Enter the Night, the one show you must see. And I was like, fine. I'll go see Enter the Night. And the guy that ran the show was friends of the people that I knew. And that was one of the shows that they were like, you really, really should audition for. And I was like, fine, let me see the show. So I went and I told them, I was like, I'm friends with such and such a person. And they're like, oh, so they were really nice. They gave me a really nice seat. And I sat and the lights went down and they did the announcement about no talking and no blah, 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 blah. And the soundscape happened where it was like, it went from left to right and it was like, and it completely directed your attention to the right side of the house. And this woman appeared in the balcony with a mask on and she started singing this really lovely little ballad interlude thing. And then she was like, Enter. She takes her mask off and she points to the stage. So of course your eye goes to the stage.
Right.
And the next thing happened is pow, 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 fireworks. And then it's like boom, the lights come on and the stage is full of colorful costumes and dancers, and they're all singing this Join Us Jumpin', a very up-to-date version of this Join Us Jumpin'. And I was like, whoa. Oh, wow. I was on the edge of my seat for the whole entire show. And I was like, this is Vegas?
Yeah.
This is not what I thought. Mm-hmm. No one said this was what Vegas was like. There were ice skaters in the show. There was stuff. It was Vegas. And it was a topless show, but it was so beautifully done that you didn't even realize they were topless until they were topless. Because mm-hmm. it like gradually progressed.
Wow.
And so it was like a little of this, a little of that, and then this came off, and this was unbuttoned, and then...
Wow.
And you were seduced into the topless, and it was really stunningly done. And I went, I want to do this. So I went, and I said, I'd like to audition for your show. And they were like, great. Are you ready to audition now? And I was like, yes, I am. So they held an audition for me on stage, and I auditioned for the show, and they offered me the job. There was, and I was like, yeah, a vacation swing? Okay, I think I understand that. So I just come in when someone's sick. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, you're here for the vacation time. And then after that, yeah, if someone gets sick, we call you and you come in and you do the show. And I'm like, okay, by plane, Vegas is an hour or so away from San Diego. Sure. And they were like, no. You have to come and live here in Vegas, because if someone gets sick, we call you at 3 o'clock.
Yes, you have can't to come take it. In. Right, right.
And I was like, oh, I have to move and live in Vegas. And I was like, I need to think about that. So thank you. Let me think about it. It's like, okay, well, you know, give us a couple of days. Call us back in about 3 days or so. I decided, sure, why not? I called my friends and said, hey, can you reach out to the Stardust and let them know I'm interested in the job? Why I didn't call the Stardust, I have no idea. I never hear anything back. So I just assumed,
right.
Meh. I finally called my friends again, and about a week later, and they were like, hey, how are you? And I was like, I'm fine. Did you hear anything? And they're like, hear anything about what? And I was like, I called you guys and left you messages saying, call them at the Stardust and tell them that I'm interested in the job. They're like, we were away, and our answer machine's been broken.
Oh, my.
And I was like, oh, no. So... We reach out and we get to the Stardust. They actually waited almost a week to hear from me.
Wow.
And I was like, that's a sign. So I took the job and I moved to Vegas. And I went from being a vacation swing to being one of the featured performers in the show. And it was amazing. That was a moment where I had a key to my dressing room. Mm-hmm. We shared a dressing room, but I had a key to a dressing room. I wasn't in the ensemble dressing room anymore. And I had a Janet Jackson mic. That was the coolest thing to me. I was like, I had my little...
Yeah, that's right.
I was like, oh my God. I felt like I was somebody. So that was like my Vegas career. And I did a lot of really cool things in Vegas. And a friend of mine left Vegas to go to New York to do a show on Broadway. Missed him dearly. We would talk, and he was like, you would love it out here. And I was like, yeah, it'd be kind of fun to go to New York, mainly because it was New York and because he was there. It didn't have anything to do with Broadway. Mm-hmm. It was just, I was like, well, it's another opportunity to be a performer and sing and stuff. So he set up an audition for me, and I went to an audition prior. He set up an audition for me, but prior to that, I had gone to an audition for Rent. Rent.
I know.
When they would do auditions everywhere, wherever their tour was at, mm-hmm. they would do an audition.
Ah.
And it was a really cool thing to expose people to auditioning for Rent and all. It was a really, really cool thing. So they were in Vegas, and I went to the audition for Rent. I walked in, you sing a song a cappella. If they like your voice, they give you sheet music and a cassette tape, and you go learn the songs from the show, and you come back later. So I don't read music, so I learned the music from the tape. I sat in the car and learned the songs. Great, it was all wonderful. I went back in, and the casting people were sitting back there. There was a piano player over there. It was in an auditorium. because the piano player is over there, casting people over there, and I'm over here. And the piano player goes, bling. And I went, I thought they were going to put in a cassette tape, and I was going to sing to...
Oh, this is funny.
I had never auditioned for a musical theater piece. I didn't know you sang with a piano. All the time that I had been singing, I always sang with a live band. Or a recording.
Right.
And a live band sounds like a recording, so, you know.
Right.
Never just with a bling. So I started singing in a whole different key than
right,
the piano player was playing
right,
in.
Right.
The casting people were looking at me, and they were looking at my resume, and one of the casting agents said, after it was done, so you're a dancer, right? And I was like, yeah. And they were like, okay, you should maybe audition for, there's a Saturday Night show called Saturday Night Fever. You should maybe audition for that. It was a really interesting situation because that actually was the show that my friend was doing, that he was setting up an audition for me.
Oh, wow.
So I went to the audition for Saturday Night Fever, same casting agency. I booked Saturday Night Fever.
Wow.
By then, I had gotten with the piano player and learned
and how to sing with the piano, right.
So when I went into the audition to sing again,
right.
It was a better success. So I booked Saturday Night Fever. At this time, though, I'm now working in Reno. I had moved to Reno to co-choreograph and assist the director for a show that she was putting up. And it was an amazing experience that I don't have time to talk about.
Okay, fine.
It was one of those things where I started off doing a little bit, and she was like, oh. So, and she kept adding
a little bit more
till I was one of the featured performers in the show, as well as being the co-choreographer for the show, and I was also her assistant in directing the show. And the second show and the third show that she ended up doing in Lake Tahoe. So that was all happening. And I book Saturday Night Fever.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to New York.
Right.
So we're like, woohoo. Well, the problem was, because of my position in the show, and the show was still running, they needed to find someone to replace me. So I couldn't leave the show in Reno until we found a replacement.
Right.
In the meantime, the casting people called me up again, and they said, while we're trying to figure this Saturday Night Fever thing out, and they wanted me there as soon as possible because someone was leaving the show on Broadway. They said, we have another show we'd like you to audition for. And I was like, okay. So, and it was Aida.
Oh,
and so
God.
I went, flew down to Los Angeles, and I auditioned for Aida. One of the most amazing auditions I've ever been on. The way that they ran the room, I hadn't been in an environment like that. The choreographer, Wayne Salento, it blew my mind. I had never felt such camaraderie and energy and passion from someone in the room. It was electrifying being in that room. Very, very, very small nutshell, I booked Aida as well.
Good grief.
So I now had two
three
Broadway.
Jobs.
I had three, well, yeah, well, truthfully, I had, yes,
right.
I had more than three jobs because I was performing, and while I was performing in those two shows, I was helping conceive the third show, and then I booked two Broadway shows, and I didn't have an agent, so a friend of mine recommended an agent for me so that I could have someone help me negotiate these contracts.
Damn right.
So I booked two Broadway shows in about the span of a month.
Oh, my God.
And Saturday Night Fever fell through because they needed me immediately, and I could not get out of my other contract, but I had Aida.
Right.
And that's how I got to New York City. And that's how I discovered the world of theater. And at first I didn't get it, because when I auditioned for Aida, it said auditions for the first national tour and possible Broadway replacements. And I was like, a tour? The first job I got was a concert tour, and I had the best time. So I was like, oh, God, I can go on tour.
Right.
This will be great. So when I booked the job, the agency called me up, and they said, you booked the show, Aida, on Broadway. And I was like,
No, I thought so it was a tour.
I said, so I didn't get the tour. And they were like, no, you got Broadway. And I was like, is that a good thing? And there was a moment of silence on the other end of the line. And they were like, it's Broadway. And I was like, okay. I didn't understand the significance. It's not that I didn't know what...
No, problem. I understand.
I didn't understand the significance of it until I got to New York. And after I got into my show, and it wasn't even being in the show, it was the first time, and the Broadway community has two events that collect funds for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. Mm-hmm. They have the Gypsy of the Year and the Easter Bonnet. And it was the Easter Bonnet being a part of that. And this was the first time I was immersed in all the Broadway shows that were putting together their skits for Easter Bonnet and raising money for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And I saw the entire picture. Yes. And I went, oh my God.
Yes, it's where everybody wants to go.
It is, yeah. And I recognized the community and the level at which I was at as a performer. And it just really hit me in the gut. Mm-hmm. And I have had a phenomenal career. I am so grateful for it. I don't even have the proper words to express what my career has meant to me. And it's taken some time. I talked to my mom about this a lot.
I was just going to ask about your mom.
She is awesome. She is awesome. She did not want me to do this.
I know.
But once I started doing it, and her main goal and importance is my happiness. As any parent, they're concerned about their kids' welfare and happiness. She sees that I'm successful and that I'm happy. And if that's happening, then she's fine. She is my biggest fan. She understands it.
Yes.
Much like she understands me and my life.
Well, also she wanted something similar. So she really knows how big a deal it is that you got it.
Yeah, yeah. It's remarkable. She came to my first, like when I was in Vegas. She's seen things that I had done. Like she saw the concert tour and stuff I did, but with the recording artist. But when she came to Vegas, as I said, I was one of the featured performers in the show. And we had, it was me and another guy, we were a singer-dancer duo. It was very cool. Very a la Nicholas Brothers, though I'm not really that great of a tap dancer. I really faked it till I made it with that. And, but we had this really amazing thing in the show where we were the finale number. We started off the finale number, which was a big tap piece. And, you know that song, Let Yourself Go?
Mm-hmm.
So, we're singing, Let Yourself Go, and we're dancing and we're tapping and all this stuff. And then we like go around the passerelle. So, you know, we have the main stage and then there was what's called the passerelle that goes out into the audience.
Uh-huh.
So we're like dancing and singing and yada, yada, yada. And there's a special table, which we sat my mom at.
Mm-hmm.
And that special table is, they take the tablecloth off and they ask you to move your drinks. Because something magical is getting ready to happen. And that magical thing is we would get up on that table and we would do a little tap dance and sing. So my other partner, my partner gets up and he does his thing. And then I get up and I do my thing. So we're tap dancing. We have microphones sewn into the hem of our pants.
Wow.
So that it picks up
the sound.
Picks
up the tap, right.
So I got up on the table, so nervous, yet so excited.
Of course.
And I was like, when you listen to the band, da-ga-da-da-ga-da-da-da. And my mom was sitting right there, and she was like, that's my baby,
into the microphone
throughout the house.
Oh, God.
It was so crazy. It was so awesome. And in recounting the story, she goes, it didn't register.
She didn't get it. She
saw us, you know, we were dancing together.
Right,
she
right,
got
right.
that.
Right.
And when he got up on the table, it didn't register until I got up on the table that was going to happen
right,
to.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, my mom is amazing, and she's there with me every step of the way. We talk relatively often, and not as often as I probably should talk to her, but when we do catch up, it's like hours of conversation. And we always talk about success and what success is. And we tend to measure our success based on other people's success. And in this career that I've had, I have done the same. I look at the people that are my peers, and I see the amounts of Broadway shows that they've done, and I see the this and the that that they've done, and I look at my own career, and I go, I haven't done that many. And it often makes me feel bad. It used to. Until I learned to step back and take stock of my career.
No kidding.
And where I have come from, and what has been brought my way, and what I have also worked to achieve and to maintain. And I've made tons of mistakes on this path, but I've also learned a lot, and I've striven to be as good as I can be. And it has led me through this really tangled street to get to where I'm at now. And it's fascinating what I get to do, and I love it. Directing beyond dance. Dance is great, but as I've gotten into theater, I started to crave text and understanding storytelling. And that has become incredibly fascinating to me. I love movement, but I've worked with some fantastic directors, and I've listened to them talk about the text of the show and how important telling the story is and weaving song and dance into that. And those are the people that I learn from and want to continue to learn from. And those are the things that I strive to do. So now I've been very much blessed with opportunity to do that. The first two things I directed actually were plays. I did two short plays, which is phenomenal.
Yes, oh my God.
Those were two things that were handed to me to do. One was handed to me. They were like, here, there's something that I'd like you to try, because I know you want to be a director, so here's this. And I was like, oh, a play. A short play, but still a play. And I was like, awesome, because I wanted to investigate the words. I wanted to find out what was behind the words. Why do the characters say these words? What does it push them to do? What's the reaction to the other person? Yada, 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 yada. Because I'm fascinated with that in real life.
Yes.
I'm fascinated with how we speak to each other and the way that you can say just one thing to someone and it may mean one thing to you, but depending on where that other person is in that moment, it can mean something completely different to them, and that's not what the intent was.
No.
I'm fascinated by human relationships because my relationships in my life are often complicated, and sometimes I don't understand why they're so complicated because I know who I am in my heart and I know what my intention is.
And you don't always get back what you're sending.
I don't.
No.
And so that's why I find text and relationships so fascinating, and that's what we get to do when you direct musicals and things like that. And so I love that I get to do this.
And we should say something about The Color Purple.
We should say something about The Color Purple. A phenomenal musical that has been a part of my life. I was part of the original production at the Alliance in Atlanta.
Oh, wow.
The world premiere of the musical, The Color Purple, part of the original Broadway company. So this show has been, it has given to me all these years, and I get to do it again now as a director. And thanks to Nate Jacobs for trusting me to do this, and Luther at Florida A&M University, who's the artistic director for the theater company out there, Luther Wells, who's a friend of Nate's, who recommended me for this position, that I get to tell this story again, and that I get to honor, hopefully, this amazing book that was written. And it's such a phenomenal piece of work, and it's an incredibly important piece of work about your individuality. It's about family to me, but it's also about learning who you are and understanding that there's a way for you to stand up on your own two feet and live your life, and that no one can hold you down and no one has power over you and rules your life. you rule your own life.
That's a
and I think that's an incredibly fascinating thing. And there are a lot of women, unfortunately, who are still living a life oppressed by men who think that they control them and physically abuse them, emotionally abuse them, mentally abuse them. That unfortunately still happens to this day. And so I think that it's a very important story to be told. And on top of that, not on top of that, in addition to that hand in hand, the story of people who are looking for love. And this show is very much also about that. We are all looking for love. Celia is very much wanting to be loved. She's been in a life where she has felt no love until these people come into their life and show her love, specifically Shug Avery coming into her life. And she finds a different kind of love, not a familial love, but a love of passion. And one of the things I love about the show and that particular storyline in the show, and it's very, very, very present in the book of Alice Walker. It's such a phenomenal book, and if you've never had a chance to read it, it's an amazing read. I thought I had read it until I reread it for this production, and it blew my mind again to read that book. And the adaptation that Marsha Norman did for the musical is wonderful as well. A lady came up to me at the world premiere in Atlanta, and she said how amazed that she was by this show because she finally understood her niece, who's a lesbian, who she pretty much shut out of her life, that she was like, I understand now. She's looking for love.
Yes.
She wants someone to love her just like we all do. And that's what it's about. And that did it. I was like, that's why we do theater. That's why we open up and we have these conversations. Because that is a life-changing moment. An important life-changing moment. So many people shut people out of their lives because they're different. Especially when it comes down to homosexuality. Because all people see is the sex.
Yes.
Specifically men in the world. All they see is two men having sex. They're okay with two women having sex. Unless it's two women that they don't find attractive. But that's what they see as the sexual act.
Right.
And they completely omit the fact that what it is exactly like it is with you. Ultimately, you want someone who you're going to love in your life. Sex is great. It's fun. It's a gift, is what sex is. In my opinion, sex is a gift. Love is something that we strive for. And that's one of the things that this show is about. And I'm so blessed that I get to tell it.
Thank you so much,
Thank
James. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, oh, no. I can't wait to see it either.
Okay, so I hope you hear what I always hope you hear. And that is when you're listening to someone who has come into their own, who is who they really are, who is spending their life doing what brings joy, happiness, passion, aliveness to that life, that you hear it and you get a chance to ask yourself, is this how I feel about what I'm doing? Is this how I'm spending my life? Am I in love with the way I'm living my life? And if the answer to that is no, then as I said at the beginning of the show, it is not too late to recover yourself, to recover the joy of being who you are, which you came into this world with. Everyone comes into the world with that gift. And again, unfortunately, too many of us are forced to relinquish pieces of that gift. So again, if you want to talk about that, if you want to listen to this interview again or any of my other interviews, and there are lots of other things up on the website. The website is thelynshow.com, thelynneshow, thelynshow.com. We're going to go out on pieces of two more songs from The Color Purple. We're going to go out on the song called The African Homeland, and also we're going to go out on a piece of Push the Button. So you get to hear the wide range of music that is in this show. And of course, you heard James talk about the wide range of stories, the wide range of points of view that are in this show. And it's still running, so If you haven't got tickets, it may be sold out, but try, because it is incredibly worth seeing. The show is worth seeing, and James's direction is worth seeing. So before I play the music, I want to say, as always, I hope that you got something you can use from this show, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
I vibrated like a bell when I saw the African coast, and I kneeled down and thanked God,
thank God,
thank God. Fathers died. African homeland, homeland,
land of my people, people, people.
We are going to be working with a tribe called the Olinka.
Linga,
Linga,
Oba,
Oba,
Batuanga,
Adatunda,
Linga,
Linga,
Oba,
Oba,
Batuanga,
Adatunda,
Linga,
Linga.
Oba,
Oba,
Linga.
We are
Oba.
Happy at the center of the universe.
Linga.
We are
Oba.
Happy at the center of the universe.
Odidi ude ude uda ude uda de. Odidi ude ude uda ude uda de. Oh you love ude.
Oh you love uda de.
Oh you love ude.
Oh you love ude.
Looking real fine in brilliant blue robes that fly on the wind like a beautiful quilt stitched together by friends. Ooh. You could put everything I knew in a thimble. What we're taught to be don't resemble the kings and queens who for thousands of years ruled magnificent cities washed away by tears.
Atubaya!
In the flow.
Now that I got your attention, here's what you may need to hear.
Don't wait a minute.
Yeah,
her in gear. Keep the key to Ramamoda, find the spot she loved her best. If you don't know where it is, give her the stick, she'll do the rest.
I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. That I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have got to